This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling, indies, and international. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, how's it going, man?
Oh, doing good. Getting excited. It's Bola weekend, which is nice. I'm only going to be making it out to the night three, unfortunately. Couldn't get tickets for night one, and I'm not going tonight just because of essentially work and this. More work than this. I just wasn't going to be able to make it there on time, so I figured there was no point. But I'm definitely excited to go to night three. I wish I could make it to night two, but, you know, That's just the cards that are dealt. How you doing tonight, Pete?
Hey, not bad, not bad. How much are those bad parts going for nowadays?
$80 a ticket for regular seats.
For GA?
Yeah, for GA. Standing room only. And I think it's like probably 90 to maybe almost 100 for the front row. So, yeah, they're pretty expensive.
That's a pricey thing. Do you think that hurts them? Not the price, obviously, because they sell out. But do you really think it hurts them being so stubborn and not going running a bigger building?
Yes. Yeah, and I think it does hurt them. I think that it hurts a lot of ways. I've talked to a lot of people who've been going for a long time, myself included. The crowd that is now kind of there is a lot different. I think you can tell the difference, really. I think it's a lot of it is still caught up in it, and a lot of people are still super, like, they can't see it, and they're not appreciating it, but I think it's been pretty clear that the crowds aren't the crowds that everyone was raving about for a long time they're making such a big deal about, and I think eventually it's going to get to the point where it will just, the bubble will kind of burst, and people won't care as much about it. I think, luckily for them, though, I mean, the scene is kind of insulated from that, but I think that the online, I mean, obviously, PWG doesn't get the talk that it used to get from the wrestlers, from the fans, from everyone. But luckily for them, I think that they have a lot of fans who go, who don't care about that. They don't care about wrestling, really, you know, too big, except for maybe WWE or NXT. But they love PWG. And then if that crowd does start to slip, a lot of the people that were going regularly before will start coming back. So I think it does hurt them because they could make a lot more money. But I think in the long run, it won't matter because I think they're essentially doing what they want right now. And I don't necessarily know that they want to be any bigger.
Do you think a lot of it with the buzz is because the DVDs take fucking forever to come out, and then the show is so passe by the time the DVDs come out?
Yes and no. That was always the case, and it didn't really seem to affect the buzz for a long time. I think the buzz has died down just because people are kind of sick of what they're giving, what they're showing, because they are focusing more on what pops the crowd that's there now and less about what's kind of the hottest stuff. I mean, you talk about guys that are showing up here during this Bola for the first time or are relatively new to the company in general. Someone like Keith Lee, I mean, or Sammy Guevara. You got Donovan Dijak debuting and essentially leaving. That used to not really be the case. I mean, PWG used to be able to bring in these guys before they were on everybody's radar, and now it's feeling like they're almost behind the eight ball in some regards.
Yeah, when it comes to Keith Lee and Guevara, for sure. And, I mean, Dijak, my God. I mean, this is his debut?
Yeah, Dijak is debuting. Joey Janela is debuting this weekend. That feels crazy as well. Like,
yeah, this is all, they're, like, way behind the times almost. Jesus, yeah, they're, like, not trendy anymore.
Almost. I mean, they're almost getting to that point. Well, like I said, they are what they are. They like what they are. I mean, realistically, I don't think anybody who works for the company, which is really only two people now at this point, two owners of the company, care to do more. One of them I know has a full-time job outside of PWG. The other one does not. So I don't necessarily know either one of them wants more than just PWG, like at the level that it is, you know?
Yeah, you're right. The more I'm thinking about it, though, it almost feels like, I mean, obviously there's still a hot promotion, don't get me wrong, but it almost feels like a way in, like, the old territories where a lot of the talent has been, like, steadfasted in, and there's really no places for young talent to make their mark there anymore. Like it used to be, PWG was the place where guys came out of nowhere and become stars. I mean, one coming to mind, like Akira Tozawa years ago at the Battle of LA, coming out of like pretty much nowhere. I mean, he was working before, I mean, before Dragon Gate, I mean, he was working some Texas indies down here, but I mean, he didn't come up until that big run he had down there, and he exploded. And now it seems like you have your same guys. You have your Ricochets, you have your Young Bucks, you have your some of the Ring of Honor guys, you have your Seidels. You know, it's almost like the same crop that's doing it in 2017 was doing it in 2009, almost, in a way, where it's almost like the WWE main event scene, in a way.
Yeah, no, and it, to me, it definitely is a... it's definitely a hindrance to how much I'm excited about it. I like that they brought in Desmond Xavier, but at the same time, it's like they brought in Desmond Xavier without Zachary Wentz, and I like them better as a tag team. I think Desmond actually is... I wouldn't say the worst. I've heard other people say that they like Zachary Wentz even more than Desmond, but I like them better together than apart, and I'm just kind of like, ah... I mean, I get why, because he's the one in TNA, he's the bigger star, but PWG used to be, as you said, the place where guys like Zachary Wentz could get a chance. One that comes to mind for me that's a big deal, it's like, PWG was the place that Adam Cole became a big thing, now he's debuting in NXT, off of that. I mean, ROH wasn't really using him, he had done good work in CZW, but no one was paying attention to it. And then another huge one, a guy who was just, you know, WWE Universal Champion recently, is Kevin Steen. I mean, a lot of people really liked his stuff in ROH, but PWG was the first place that let him talk primarily. We're giving him a push to the top. We're building the whole company around him. While ROH was, he was just a guy there. They had him in a tag team with Generico. Eventually he breaks out, becomes a big deal. But it's like, right now, a guy that was at that level, let's say, you know, I mean, I think a suitable comparison would be like Dalton Castle, lower mid-card guy in ROH who has the ability to possibly break out and prove that he could be a bigger star. PWG's used him about 3 times and stopped booking him. You know what I mean? They're just not the same company that they used to be.
Yeah, the last guy, it feels like the last guy they really made was Speedball Mike Bailey, in a way. I mean, and that was a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, and they may have even pushed him further if it hadn't been for his whole thing.
Yeah, and then his whole entire debacle kind of fucked him because he can only be booked out of country right now. So, when that wasn't their fault per se, but it fucked them. Yeah, it just doesn't seem like they're creating new talent like they used to.
Yeah, and I mean, they don't use any local guys at all anymore. They've even, I mean, I don't know if we want to talk about it too much, but they've even got now offshoot. They've got competition companies like PCW that's really doing, like, essentially the Wrestle Circus model. It's a pretty big-time super indie, bringing a lot of imports. They've got AWS booking the local guys. Santino Brothers running shows more regularly now, who have some of the really best students in Southern California.
Some great, great talent there, yeah.
Yeah, and then you've also now got Bar Wrestling popping up, which is being run by one of the founders of PWG, and they're essentially, they're trying to run like a PWG tribute act. Like this, it's like early 2000s PWG tribute act. They're, you know, essentially making it out like it's that same company from, like, 2004, 2005. So it is kind of interesting to see that they're even having competition that came from within and is actually trying to fill the hole that they've left now that they've turned into something different. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay. Well, enough on PWG. I just wanted to touch on it a little bit. Let's get into some wrestling. I got to say, before we get into some wrestling, I want to just wish everybody out in Houston and the surrounding areas good luck. And I'll tell you one thing. I have a lot of family out there, and I have friends. And I've had friends who have been getting out on their boats and going up and trying to pick up survivors and going into flood areas and helping people who needed helping evacuating. And it's really neat, you know, they post their Facebook Live videos and all this stuff, but it's really neat, actually. I mean, I don't want to say it's neat, but it just shows what a great, how tough and how they all have all strung together to really work together to one with everyone working together for a common cause, and that's trying to help their fellow man out. And it's really a great watching Houston, because it's a really fascinating story that's coming out. I mean, I'm from LA. Does it come across like that to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing a lot of stuff. It's really cool. I heard they do this pretty regularly whenever there's stuff going on, but it's something that crosses over in the craft beer world. I heard Oscar Blues, whenever this stuff happens, these kind of events, they shut down their production for making beer, and they just start canning water and sending it to the places where people need it, which is really cool of them. So they're doing that. I actually heard you guys talking, I think, a little bit about it on WorldCast last episode. Same thing you were saying about the boats, and I think someone mentioned the people were in their boats, or people were shooting at boats that were looting and all this. The way I had heard that story was a little different. It was that people were shooting at people in boats because they weren't taking everyone because the boats were full, which is a really weird reaction, but it just goes to show that the people are, you know, the people are out there doing good. The people are afraid for their lives, and you can't always, you know, judge someone in their bleakest moments for their actions. But like you said, seeing that people are, even knowing that risk, even taking that risk, are still going out and trying to save as many people as they can, that's really, really kind of inspiring. So yeah, I mean, the whole thing that's going on in Texas is really cool. You know, I'm hearing people politicizing it in some ways. I think that that's honestly kind of awful. I wish that we could just worry about the people who need help and try to take care of them, and that's all that we need to do right now. But I mean, obviously there's a bigger picture issue here, but that's not necessarily the thing that we need to talk about here on this podcast, right?
Oh, no, yeah, exactly. And I just want to pass it on. And I also want to pass on our thoughts and prayers to Ben Zaney's family. His grandmother recently had a bad bit of luck, and so he's heading out to New York. He's a listener and a friend of mine. And so I just wanted to wish him good luck and stuff, and our thoughts are with him. But now let's get into some wrestling. CWF Mid-Atlantic had the Weaver Cup. I thought this was pretty damn good episodic television, brother. It reminded me a lot of the old, how they did the old UWF World Title Tournament back in like 80, I think it was 86, or it might have been 85. Where there's a lot of interweaving storylines, and it wasn't all about wrestling, where sometimes tournaments, all they do is push the wrestling. And here we got good wrestling with good angles, with great booking, with a lot of interesting turns and stuff, and weaves and ebbs and flows and stuff I didn't see coming a mile away. What do you think about it as an episodic situation?
Yeah, this is like one of the best episodes of wrestling, one of the best wrestling shows, things, whatever you want to call it, programs that I've watched in probably years. From top to bottom, this was great. Like you talked about the storytelling, the ebbs and flows.
I legitimately don't think it had a 4-star match on the whole entire show.
Yeah,
I
mean,
it didn't need it because it was so captivating.
Yeah, everybody in here played their roles to a T. Everything about this felt important, like you're talking about. Everything really, just twists and turns, and this was great.
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away. We open up with Smith Garrett versus Logan East and LaRue. Smith Garrett has been won his first two matches under, like, 20 seconds. And you're thinking, and I'll ask you, Tim, I was thinking that he's like peaking right now at the right time for the tournament. Was that how you're reading his run?
Yeah.
So far at the tournament, right?
Yeah, very much.
And then Logan Easton LaRue, the one percenter, somehow has Smith Garrett's x-rays, and it shows that Smith's neck is broken, essentially. And you see Garrett breaking down when confronted by Stutzy and the other commissioner of the CWF. Stutzy, he's the booker, but he's also a character, And if you watch him, he's just like, watching the whole entire story unfold. Even though he obviously knows what the story is, he was great putting it over from what's going on type of expression. I thought was fantastic. And then, I mean, the whole reveal and Smith breaking down I thought Smith Garrett made this angle. I mean, he could have come across as cheesy or over the top, but Garrett played it. I thought Garrett played it to perfection. The Weaver Cup meant so much to him. He was hiding the fact that he had a broken neck, and when it was exposed, you could see his like shame because he wanted to still compete, and he breaks down and he just adds all this more heat to Logan East and LaRue. I thought this whole entire thing was tremendous. I mean, absolutely tremendous. What about you, Tim?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. When Smith Garrett starts breaking down and he's crying, that was just amazing. I mean, the look on his face, the real emotion coming from Stutzy and, God, I don't know the other guy's name, unfortunately, and I just heard it today.
I don't remember either.
I was just listening to Johnny P's podcast, and they were talking about him, too, and I forgot his name. I just thought that the x-rays coming through, Logan East and LaRue, I mean, yes, it's, you know, I work in the medical industry, so I know that there's HIPAA laws and regulations, but at the same time, CWF is that, it's kind of this time warp dimension, right, because it's supposed to be 70s, 80s studio wrestling got trapped in time, so maybe, I don't know, maybe they have different rules in their universe, but I just thought that was...
I believe there's separate rules, laws for that affect wrestling, so I could buy it.
Yeah, and I love that he explains it too. He says, you know, being of the 1%, being of the upper class, I have connections and access that the rest of you don't, so that makes perfect sense. He shows it, and coming off of it, you know, it did seem, oh, you know, Garrett is so ready to go. He's going up against this asshole who, they mentioned that Logan really only had one match to get to the finals. I forgot if he had gotten a bye in another round or what had happened there, but it was just very interesting to see him. He gets snuck by here, and after Smith Garrett had really, you know, had such quick matches and seemed like he was just tearing through everybody, so
he flash pinned somebody real quick.
Okay, that's probably right. So yeah, and then so that setup, I know that was part of the setup to his match with Alex Daniels.
Yeah,
I just don't remember exactly who it was or what had happened, but yeah, I just thought it was a great way to put heat on him and come out of it and just super old school, great angle.
Yep, and that leads us into Ethan Sharp versus Chet Sterling. What were your thoughts here?
From the start, I just thought that it was going to be all about Sterling, going after LaRue. I thought that, like, when the Weaver Cup started, it felt like that was the story of the whole Weaver Cup. But then coming into this match, Ethan Sharp comes out, and then Sterling comes out second, and I had, like, forgot about Sterling, because the rest of the stories have become so engrossing, they've almost started to overshadow. But when he did come out and his music hit, and now I know, oh, LaRue is in the final, I'm like, okay, this makes sense. But I was still questioning it slightly. That's how good the CWF booking is, that I was still kind of like, well, it seems like they set up a certain story, but Ethan Sharp has looked great throughout this whole tournament. I could definitely see them putting him over. And that it just goes to show, you protect somebody, you build him up. It was only like 3 or 4 matches, but that's enough, you know, in a tournament like this to make you believe in the guy.
And they developed him with a new finisher.
Yeah, and it made it believable because it was just a big punch, so it didn't come across like something, you know, kind of contrived and crazy. He just, you know what, he just has to catch a guy with the punch. He doesn't have to necessarily be the better man. He can get him with this, and it'll be, you know, that could be it. So, I liked the way that the match was worked. I think that they did a really good job with some nice near falls. I thought Ethan's cutoffs were great. I especially like the top rope dive gets caught into what they call a bareback. So it's the Danny Doring call out. I thought that was pretty funny to hear that on the show. Big superplex. And I just thought that the finish with Sterling being able to catch kind of a flash roll up pin, makes you believe somewhat, like, oh, okay, good stuff. He got the pin. He's better. Sets up the angle afterwards where he gets jumped by Ethan Page, who's the one weakness that we got from, not Ethan Page, Ethan Sharp. right now is that the maniacal laugh, I don't think, is necessarily his strong suit. He might want to take it easy on trying to do the crazy laugh because he doesn't have it quite down just yet. But I loved the angle afterwards because then, again, now you know going into the finals, Sherling is the underdog even more after the bye that LaRue just got. So this was, I mean, this is textbook 101 booking. This is great stuff here.
Yeah, it was a match that elevated Ethan Sharpe even with the loss. It was clearly Ethan Sharpe's best match he's ever done with that got time, you know, because this thing got 12 or 13 minutes. I enjoyed it. It was a fun bout. I really liked the grittiness to it. Like Sharpe's running double knees to Sterling's back in the corner looked really nasty. I like Sterling mixing up the brawling with like some of the high spots and athletic spots. I thought it was really well done and stuff. And that opens us up to Eric Andrews versus Innocent Isaiah. I love Eric Andrews with CCCL Party early, having her redo his announcing how he should be announced. I like that. It's real swarmy heel 101 stuff. I think adding Lee Valiant helps as a second because it gives Andrews another something to play with and another person to play off of. And I've always felt that worked really well with TV title guys, be it Tully Blanchard and J.J. Dillon or William Regal and Sir William. It just adds a lot in the whole entire TV title way you're able to play around with the formula, and it adds another layer of what they can do with in that 10-minute time limit, title defenses and stuff. I thought this was another strong Andrews performance, just carrying the game and making it like Innocent Isaiah had a chance to beat him, which is what the whole entire role of the TV champion is that he seems beatable on the outside, but somehow keeps on chugging along. And I thought this was another one, man. And I think ever since that Trevor Lee match, it feels like Andrews is really, he was coming into his own before. Don't get me wrong, but the Trevor Lee match kind of gave him a stamp of approval in a way. And then he basically made Cam Carter last week, and then he did something similar, not to the on the level of the Cam Carter because he didn't have the booking to go with it, but he did another really good job of making him look good. I think Andrews needs to work a little bit on his striking at some points. It looked a little soft at points, but overall, I thought it was a really good, well done match. What about you?
I agree with everything you said. I was really taken aback with how smart Eric Andrews really works at. You talked about the hope spots, the selling, the fighting on the back foot to make you believe that Innocent Isaiah could possibly win this, which is just amazingly well done by Andrews. You talk about freshening up the act. I mean, they're pouring on the heat at this point with, you know, making CL Party give the just ridiculous kind of notes about him for the intro, adding in Lee Valiant. It was honestly perfect timing, I thought about it when we're talking about it, because it's not that, you know, what his shtick was getting stale, but that's like, you gotta freshen up before it's stale, you know, and that's the perfect thing that he did here, by freshening up the act, give it a new coat of paint, doing all this extra stuff before you kind of started to think that everything was getting repetitive and started to get sick of it. So it adds another wrinkle to his act and makes it really work. And so, yeah, I think Eric Andrews, is really becoming like one of my favorite parts of this show. And it's just kind of impressive. Cause I mean, to me, I think when we first started reviewing it, I had seen him here and there, but I didn't think much of him, but he's a guy that if you pay attention, you just realize just how good he is.
It's really strong psychology, or at least from what you can tell, really strong TV, title psychology. And then we see him have that great match with Lee, where it translates there also. So I'm really interested in seeing where it goes even further here. And then the roof's going to blow finally when someone beats him. I can't wait to see that when that happens.
Yeah, he just comes across a guy who would have been so great in the territory area or era. Like, being able to just kind of come and go. I mean, we talk about freshening up the act, but, I mean, yeah, you get a solid year run out of this guy, and then he can, you know, go on to the next place and get just as much heat and adapt to different crowds, because I think it works in front of everyone.
Yeah. I definitely would have played in the Southern crowd, the Southern territories, for sure. For sure. Then we get Kane Justice promo. What were your thoughts here, man?
Oh, I loved this promo. I thought he did a really good job talking about and playing off the history between him and Dirty Daddy, putting himself over and making it feel like a big deal that these guys they're growing up together as generation rivals, and that he's just always had that one step ahead, and he's just going to prove it once again.
Yeah, I thought this might have been Kane's best promo ever that I've seen. I thought this was really good stuff. And I'm always love when the heel puts his spin on things, or when we get to his heel psychology, or his POV, if you will, on the angle of what happened. And it is, in his mind, it wasn't that him and Dirty Daddy didn't get along. It was that Daddy wasn't going with the plan of Kane being the boss, and that's why they weren't able to defend the honor of the CWF dojo, because Daddy wasn't playing going by what the script was, which was not the script, but not going with the plan, which was Kane Justice being in charge, and Daddy thought he was in charge, and it caused what happened. I absolutely always love that psychology, and I think everyone was really exposed to it during the Mick Foley's book, and this is textbook Mick Foley. He always said when as a heel, he wanted to always find a reasoning on why he was doing something, why he was attacking Dirty Daddy, or why he was fighting The Undertaker, or what have you. And here, Kane Justice explained it, because Daddy wasn't on the same page as Kane, but the page was that the book that Kane was reading, he was in charge. I'm sure the book Daddy was reading, Daddy was in charge. So I just love that. I just love the heel psychology of the interview, which a lot of people miss. Sometimes I think interviews are just to be entertaining or what have you, or to be sound bites. But man, the best thing to do is when you get into that character and you buy into the angle, and you're able to like a great villain believes he's the hero in the story. And I think that's what Kane did here, which was just freaking tremendous. That's why he's like one of my favorite guys. I mean, he's just getting it. And it's so awesome. You see him comes out of the CWF dojo. He's trained by Eric Royal and Trevor Lee, essentially, right?
Yeah, I think those are the guys who run the dojo. I think that Andrew Everett spends time there as well, but I think those are the main trainers.
Okay, and you see it. I mean, you look at it. He looks like he took the best of what Eric Royal teaches, and he's able to connect to the crowd and work the crowd. And he also seems like he picked up a lot of Trevor's psychology on how to work a match. And I think he's meshed both. I think he took the best of both of what the guys got to taught. And what we get is Kane Justice. And I mean, he's just like God. I mean, and then with this promo, which just click, you know, I mean, yeah, his presentation might be a little better, could be working on it a little better, but the psychology behind the promo is absolutely fantastic, and it's just a testament to the dojo of this is what we bring to the table from the teachers, and this is what we got, which is like a, you know, it's like a freaking hybrid of Eric Royal and Trevor Lee, which to me is a damn good wrestler, you know?
Yeah, I know. Two of the best acts going really right now in wrestling to me. So
yeah,
you couldn't ask for much better.
And then this leads us into the main event. Chet Sterling, Logan Easton LaRue. What were your thoughts here?
So yeah, I mean, the opening up of the match was perfect. Easton LaRue is looking for the sneaky drop kick, jumping Chet before the bell. I mean, on top of it, Chet got jumped by Ethan Sharp. LaRue used his bullshit connections to get Smith Garrett kicked out of it, get a bye on his semifinal match, and he still takes a cheap shot before the match. It's so just devilishly heelish. It's amazing to think like he's going to put that much into it. I love kind of Chet's fire. I mean, from underneath, he's probably like one of the best fiery underdog baby faces in the world. I mean, Chet Sterling really gets the crowd behind him. You really buy into him from underneath. Big sympathy building up for him. I love that he starts throwing fists. He's just trying to do whatever he can to get on him. And it brings back, you know, the genesis of the feud. And you remember where this all started. And it's the emotion of all of that is in the punches and the mount and the attacks from Everett or from Chet Sterling here, where you're just like, it snaps you back into all that story because it feels like it's been so long. I talked about kind of forgetting about that being the story of the Weaver Cup, and then it came right back as the match was worked. I think they did such a great job of refocusing on that point to make this feel like such a big deal. I mean, what were the chances from the start when Chet Sterling said he was putting himself in the Weaver Cup so he could get his hands on Logan, and he ends up getting to him in the finals? Logan gets in firm control again, starts putting together some big moves, and then he starts to feel too confident. And I'm sitting on my couch going, come on, man, just focus. You could win this. And I don't know why. I really don't know why I was like kind of annoyed. I think it was in some ways it was authentic. I wasn't quite at heat, but it was like getting there where I was just like, dude, you should just be able to easily win this. You don't need to rub it in. You know what I mean? Like, I was getting upset that he was rubbing it in on top of it because he's an asshole. And I could totally see that if I was in the crowd live watching it, that I would get swept up in the moment, and that would just be making me pissed off. I would be major heat. I would be so upset that he's, like, taking the time to do this. I like that they had mentioned the ref being someone they hadn't seen, and then it plays up into the finish with the ref calling the DQ for the closed fists. And I thought it was great. Even before the ref was talking about open up those hands, Chet's fists, again, as I was saying, were such a big part of the story. His punches felt so important, and then to see that he's going to lose because of those fists, he's going to lose because of the rage that's coming at him, coming out of him at Logan, was like so just kind of apropos. But then it gets, you know, wait a minute, that's not our ref. Whose ref is this? He's not your ref. And then they're putting the match back on as Chet has to run down and grab LaRue before he can even get out of the building. Once again, LaRue gets the upper hand. He gets that cheap shot. He grabs the cutter out of nowhere, but Chet is able to kick out. And yeah, I was so into this as the look on LaRue's face when Chet kicks out of the cutter. He's the cat with the canary. You know, he just looked like mouth agape, like he's been caught. And then Chet finishes him off, takes him down, hits a high fly flow, gets the win. I gave this 3¾ stars. I think that it was, even with all the crazy zany overbooking, it was still really good. But to me, I think some of that might have detracted from making it like a top level great, great match.
Yeah, with 3.5. I enjoyed everything about it. I actually loved the booking about it. I mean, I thought it made it even stand out, and it fit the character of Logan East and LaRue. I just loved because it took me on the roller coaster ride because I was like, what, you're DQing him? I mean, because I didn't see he had the ref on the payroll type thing, blah blah blah. I was just like taken aback because he did warn. I mean, he seemed like he was doing it right down the middle. He warned Logan East and LaRue, then he warned Chet, and then Chet did freaking punch him. So, I mean, there was grounds for a disqualification. I was like, what? But then they restart it, and we go to the races, and we have a great running, just a great exchange, some brawling outside, and then he comes in, and then wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Just really good stuff. One thing I forgot to mention earlier, because I don't know why, but right after the Eric Andrews inside Isaiah, they start putting the boots on Isaiah, and I've always loved this setup. They in Houston, back in the 80s when I used to go to Houston Wrestling by Paul Bosch. They used to do this all the time, especially when two people were partners, like Eric Andrews and Lee Valiant. Well, a lot of times it would be actually Tully and Gino. And say Tully would be wrestling Mil Máscaras, and then Gino would come out and interfere in it, and they'd be putting the boots to Mil. Then someone would come out to save Mil, and then that would be the next person who was supposed to be wrestling Gino. And this is kind of what we got here was Rob McBride, the Boogie Woogie Man, comes out, and he's fighting Lee Valiant. And comes out for the save, and then his match ensues with Lee Valiant. And I thought this was just fun stuff too. I always enjoy when one match can bleed over into another. I've used this term enough where people probably think I spend all my time in the rain by I talk about umbrella storytelling, and here this is another great example of umbrella storytelling. You open up the umbrella and one of the other pegs go to another person, and here it was McBride and Valiant was in one group, and then Rob McBride gets sucked in, and then we could easily see a tag team feud come bear out of this. I just always find umbrella storytelling really compelling. What you make of the this that I forgot to talk about?
You say the umbrella talk, people are going to think you're in the rain, but they might also get you confused for a Marty Scurll fan, so you might want to watch out for that.
Yeah, this is true.
I actually really enjoyed it as well. I noticed you had skipped over it, but I don't know. Maybe I thought that it was a fever dream, or I didn't. I don't know why I didn't mention that you skipped over it when you did, but. But yeah, I agree with you. I loved that. I loved when Catchpoint was doing that regularly with their matches kind of leading into each other. I just think it's a great device to move along the story in wrestling. And Rob McBride is just great. I mean, you know.
And keep the action going, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But lots of fun. Good stuff. And it works well with kind of getting the heat back or whatever on the Valiant Eric Royal group Eric Andrews group without having to beat the champion. So, you know, smart stuff.
Exactly. And then obviously we already talked about it. We love this episode. Do you have any final thoughts on it?
No, as you said, great episode. Great show in general. Excited to see where they're going next. The Weaver Cup, past 2 years that we've covered it, I think has been some of the best wrestling of the year. I think last year after the Weaver Cup is when Trevor started really turning it up with big time title defenses, so we'll see if that if it follows suit and we have that again.
And I kind of like how they planted the seed with Trevor coming out and the end and cementing Chet. I kind of like that, where maybe are we going to get something down the line with these guys? It's just foreshadow stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the Weaver Cup gets a title shot, no? Doesn't the Weaver Cup winner get a title shot? So you would assume he'd be getting that title shot from Trevor, and they are buddies. So, yeah, I really like that as well.
Yep. And, hey, I just want to remind everyone, October 13th and 14th, CWF Fan Fest. It's going to be a blast. Follow at Jay Bryant, JB, follow at Jay Bryant 025 on Twitter to get all the details. Look at John Philip Havage on Twitter to get all the deets. It's going to be a fun time. I'm going to be there. And so that makes sure it's going to be fun. And come on out. We're going to watch some great wrestling. We'll talk a lot of great wrestling, have some beers, some food, whatever. Have a good time. I'm going to tell you guys, it's going to be a blast. Come on out. Support a great product at CWF Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest this year, October 13th and 14th. On that note, why don't we take a break?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place of Nations, JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceofNation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back, and we're like looking at NXT, and this is fresh off TakeOver, as you know, so it's starting all over, finishing up some storylines, starting some new ones, and continuing some of the storylines that were started on TakeOver. And right off the bat, we have standings laid out, and we see, looks like from the distance, it looks like it's O'Reilly and Fish and Cole walking away. So they're definitely putting this, and Regal's out, and they definitely made it seem like it was Cole, O'Reilly, and Fish laying out Sanity. I thought it was a nice piece of business, and I love how Hunter, I know he doesn't do all the booking, but you know he has ideas, and I kind of like how he does a lot of homages to old wrestling, and here we're getting the old NWO, I'm sure in WWE lore it's the DX invasion, but come on, it's not. They're clearly doing NWO here. Cole is Hulk Hogan, and O'Reilly and Fish are Hall and Nash, and just on the little smaller scale, star power and bank accounts here. But I still think it still works. You know what? Evading people, especially when you're able to use the real name, the names they used at the other location, it just adds a little bit more to it, and it's cool. And they're an invading faction, you know, you're buying into it, and they're presenting it a lot more different than they usually present talent coming into NXT. So I'm all in. I think it's really neat. What about you?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what people who aren't familiar with Adam Cole think. Because putting him with Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, I wonder if a lot of people who aren't familiar with Adam Cole are going to expect him to have a similar style to them, which he doesn't. So that is kind of odd that they did that. But yeah, you're totally right. And speaking of Kevin Nash, they didn't just lay out Sanity. They also laid out Fred Yehi in a security outfit that seemed to be playing his best Kevin Nash from the Sting versus Triple H match at WrestleMania, as he's laying on the ground, reaching at his quad, like pretending that it had just ripped or torn off of his bone or something. So I thought that was pretty funny to see that. But yeah, I'm super excited for this, and I think there's more wrinkles that, you know, maybe I'm just like working myself into a shoot. Seems like no one says that anymore, which is actually for the better. But that they have Nigel on commentary, who's fresh off of ROH. They've got Steve Corino in the back, who's also fresh out of ROH. And they've got Roddy Strong here in the opening promo saying, I don't care about them, I only care about my family and the title in this. And you're kind of like, well, Roddy Strong is fresh off of ROH. And, you know, there's some people teasing maybe he'll join up with them. I honestly think that would be bad for booking. But there is a lot of intrigue here. It's, you know, it's nice to see you got Nigel as he's like the voice of the invasion in some ways. I kind of hope they don't fully affiliate him with them, but just have him kind of be subtly on their side just because they're friends. I think that works a lot better. But yeah, this is definitely some very, very interesting stuff. It's a cool storyline. The other part of it, too, is you say this is This is NWO Invasion, which it is very similar, but another thing that it's similar to is the ROH versus CZW feud, which if you make one more kind of reference, one of the people involved with booking that was Gabe Sapolsky, who, you know, rumor is down here helping book NXT. So all this stuff just goes hand in hand to be very exciting.
Yeah, and you know what, and people are whining, oh, it's just, this is NWO 2.0 light. It's like everything in wrestling, all angles are repeats and stuff. I mean, God, I've watched enough territory wrestling to tell you there are so many freaking, there's no new ideas really in wrestling. It's they present it, and they present it with different people. And it's all up to them to get over. And so far, I think this is great, and it makes Cole O'Reilly Fish seem special to me, and big time. Then we get Drew McIntyre comes out in a promo as champ. I thought it was good and effective for his character. Strong comes out and challenges Drew after he beats Rude, so that foreshadows our main event later. I've heard people don't think Drew's quite over as champ. And, you know, I can actually buy that. I just don't think Drew had the same pedigree as, like the last couple champs coming out of the indies, like Samoa Joe and Steen and Finn Balor and Nakamura, where these guys had a big-time pedigree, while Drew was a guy who was looked at as a WWE failure who was able to rehabilitate himself, but it does not quite the same cachet of an indie star name as the other guys. He seems more like a guy who honestly, you look at him, he looks like a guy who should be on the WWE roster right now, as opposed to NXT champ, and it almost feels like he's slumming. I don't know. Do you buy into these talks that he's not quite over?
I thought that this opening promo kind of situation for him just felt awkward. Like, it didn't really work for me. And it, probably part of it was that he's just not necessarily right for this position. Like, I buy into him, but it just didn't feel like what the NXT champion, how he should be acting, carrying himself, or even be presented. So,
And it's tough. He's following Bobby Roode, who, even though Roode had a lot of detractors online, I thought he was a great champion. I mean, from his act to his in-ring work, I thought he had good enough matches as the guy on top, and I thought he was a great promo. I thought he was a really strong promo, and I thought they presented him very well as NXT champion.
Yeah, and he carried himself like a champion, so it really helped add to the act.
So what do you think the problem is with McIntyre? Why doesn't he fit the picture in the mold?
I don't know. The, like, big I want to fight guy just doesn't seem right. And we talked about the indie pedigree and him not really necessarily having that. The matches with Roddy kind of helping lend credibility to his indie run. But I feel like he's just, especially from the indie run that he got, he did have that nice run as, like, the ace of Evolve, I think, as Evolve started to percolate and become something. But I don't think that necessarily during that time Evolve was super, super hot, and by the time he had lost the title, I think he was on top of not really being the focus of the company anymore, people weren't really paying attention to it as much. And then from there, he was really kind of a special attraction guy in a lot of places, and kind of a guy who got flown in and out and didn't really have big commitments to a company as a top level guy. So I think he's just out of practice on how to carry himself as a champion. And I think it shows, and I think people aren't appreciating him because of that.
Yeah. And I think he fits better on the main roster than he does on NXT, to tell you the truth. As in the character, it just doesn't fit like an NXT champion type character, the big monster babyface. That feels more like Hulk Hogan in the 80s I just described, as opposed to anybody from NXT. We haven't had monster babyface champion, have we?
No, not in NXT. Oh, I mean, Big E Langston, I guess, would have been it.
But that was before NXT got hot, you know?
Yeah, and he was fun and likable. And Drew,
right.
Drew doesn't come across unlikable, but he doesn't come across like your friend. And Biggie at that time came across like he was your friend and the champion.
Gotcha. And that leads us to Robbie Roode. Bobby Roode cuts a promo. What were your thoughts here?
I liked it, but it feels... I mean, he did a pretty good job of making his point in all this, but it does feel like it's just doing the, like, resolving action stuff, especially because he's already debuted on SmackDown. It really... This kind of stuff, I mean, I get why they do it, but I don't necessarily know if they need to do it.
You know, I understand him closing shop down, but do you feel like they could have waited to debut him a week at least? Especially they debuted him. They debuted him as a babyface, it seemed like. Why don't you let him finish up his commitments here first before debuting him?
Yeah, I definitely think they should have done one or the other. I don't mind the idea if he loses the title and then you don't see him again even. I think would have been better.
I would have been pissed because I still felt that bullshit to Roddy. Because you still make Roddy look like a chump by not being able to defend his family. And here at least he gets the final verdict in a way, you know?
Yeah, which is nice.
Yeah, and then we got Peyton Royce versus Ruby Riott. What were your thoughts here?
I thought that Peyton Royce looked good here. Ruby Riott, clearly, I don't know if they're having her grow her hair out, but I think that there might be a little bit of buyer's remorse on her and Abby Laith, as I've heard a little bit of rumblings that people are not necessarily super happy with them, which kind of sucks. But I thought Peyton Royce is coming into her own here, wrestling more like her character somewhat. The match was moderately quick. And yeah, I mean, I don't think it's great, but I thought it was a pretty solid showing from both girls. But I'm worried about Ruby Riott, what their plan is with her. And I think that, honestly, I think that the Iconic is actually coming together in a way where we've talked about the just send them up to the main roster and have them do promos and don't worry about their in-ring. But I think that they are, maybe they could still put it together and have a run at it as wrestlers. I mean, it does seem pointless, though, with the way that the women are kind of being treated on the main roster. But, you know, still, I mean, I think that they could maybe have a decent go of it as well.
Yeah, I felt this is one of Peyton's better performances, so maybe she's getting better, and I just haven't noticed it until now. Then we got a Regal interview, and Hero comes in, or Cassius Ohno, and he ends up getting a no DQ match with Tommy, because I guess Hero was sick, and that's why they switched over to Aleister Black. What'd you make of... one, does it make Hero look like a pussy for being sick and not being able to face a Tommy? I mean, I just got a chuckle out of that one. What'd you make of this whole entire thing?
Well, I guess I had to make this up on my own, but I had thought that what they were trying to say was that the Hideo post-match attack had put him on the disabled list or something.
Okay.
But they never said that. So I had to, like, make that up. So I do wish that they had, like, told that story.
It makes sense what you're saying now, because I remember it now. It just bleeds through. But they normally NXT will beat you over the head, and they sure in hell didn't do it here.
No, they really didn't say. And this might be the WWE edict thing that they're doing right now, but I mean, I've heard from people that they shy away from kind of stuff that's, like, major head blows and injuries and stuff like that. Okay. So, because he was getting go to sleep on the stairs and all this, maybe that's why they didn't want to draw attention to it. But it does affect the presentation of the story when you shoot this major angle and then he's just gone and he shows back up and you never say, like, he had this, this is what happened, this is why he was gone. So,
and they use the term sick, right?
I didn't, he said some. I think Regal said something about the trainer's reports.
Okay, because I thought Hero himself said, I wasn't able to face him at TakeOver because I was sick, and I'm like, okay, that just sounds horrible. If it is the kind, you know, if you're gonna shy away from it, then don't do that angle.
Right, I know. Which is just, that's like the worst part about it, is that they're trying to have it both ways. It really doesn't work because it just leads to confusion. I think it does make Hero not look good that he had his little brother have to take his fight for him. Whatever. I mean, that's fine, I guess.
And that leads us to, we get this heavy machinery vignette. I don't know why we get, when we know who the hell they are, we've seen them, they got a title match. Why do we need a vignette before their fucking match? Vignettes are done with, okay? Vignettes are there to introduce new talent or to get an angle over. This was just another fluffy profile vignette piece, kind of. And it was like, why? But then they go and have a fun squash. I literally do like Heavy Machinery. It's just NXT does a terrible job of, if you're not fighting for the title, you just get lost in the shuffle in a way. But I guess Heavy Machinery is a babyface. The Street Profits, I guess, are babyfaces, right?
I would assume so.
Sammy's in the title match. We don't know what's going on with Arthur's a pain. They need to get some heel tag teams in there.
I don't think they have a single heel tag team, right? Oh, I guess they got Sabatelli and Moss, who haven't been on TV in months.
Yeah, and I don't consider them like a choice. You know. That's part of the problem there. What'd you make of the squash in the vignette?
I mean, now I'm trying to think about this.
Do we need this vignette?
The vignette? No, I was trying to think about what this is like, because there's other forms of entertainment where they do this. It's like a title screen before the break to remind you to get you excited for what's coming next. The only thing I can think of is it's like The Price is Right with when you're going to break, Bob Barker says, up next we're playing Plinko or something, and then they show the board. Like, it's fucking weird. It's not how wrestling works. Yeah. And I think it is the WWE style doesn't trust the commentators or the presentation to be done like old school wrestling, because the way wrestling works is, or wrestling has worked, is you would have just had the commentator say, after the break, we're going to have a match with Heavy Machinery. Like, that would have been enough. But they are...
They do it all the time. Like, coming up, the main event.
Yeah.
Bobby Roode, Roderick Strong. That's all I need. I don't need no damn vignette of Heavy Machinery doing their thing.
But I think also part of it is that they're trying to trick you into thinking that they're re-debuting as a new act that you can take seriously now because that other part is over where they got beat by Authors of Pain, or I don't know. And again, it doesn't make any sense. I feel like they're baby faces.
Yeah, in a program they got over and they squashed it too quickly.
Right. I feel like they're baby faces. I feel like Insanity returned babyface at TakeOver, but I guess they could go back. You could say that they're still heel if they just act like that was just like a one-night thing.
Right.
But then you got Red Dragon, who I think pretty clearly are probably going to win the titles, like, I would assume, relatively quickly. So yeah. Maybe that makes sense if you get the titles on Red Dragon and then you have a bunch of baby faces for them. But I don't know if I'm super excited to see Red Dragon versus Heavy Machinery, but I did like the squash match. And I like Heavy Machinery. I think that's the problem with Heavy Machinery is that they're just really good squash workers, but they don't necessarily have a 25-minute match in them yet. I think maybe they could get there, but who knows? I mean, their gimmick is kind of weird. It doesn't necessarily work for, like, a long, drawn-out match.
Yeah, it also doesn't help that they're not in a program. So I like them as characters, and they can eat up time. But without having an actual foe, it's just tough. Then we get a recap of Lars Sullivan attacking No Way Jose. Lars with Regal. Regal sets up a reverse handicap match for Lars. They're definitely protecting Lars, going the route of the monster gimmick. Cool. He has an interesting look. I don't know if I buy into him yet, but I'm curious to see where they're going with him. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to be super excited when he comes out for his three-on-one match next week, and it's the debut of Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, and Bobby Fish, and they just murder Lars Sullivan to get over their angle. Though, they're obviously protecting him, and he does have a great look. I've heard some people really talking him up, like he could be a big breakout star. I go back to that big honking knee brace on this guy's knee as he's learning how to wrestle. That doesn't scream to me that he's got a long, long wrestling career ahead of him. But from everything I've heard, great guy, works really hard, obviously is putting in the work, but he's just not quite clicking yet, but they haven't given him much to sink his teeth into, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, And that leads us to the main event of Bobby Roode and Roddy Strong. What are your thoughts?
These guys worked this match, I mean, like an epic main event. The back and forth was phenomenal. The pace that Roddy can cut the whole way through. The cutoffs that Roddy continuously has, going looking for the back, working over the body the whole time, looking for charging strikes and rude countering and getting out of the way of different backbreakers constantly was phenomenal. And I just, I think that Roddy has, I talked about it when he was in PWG still, when he was the champion, he's got this amazing ability to go from dead and dying to really on that bike within seconds. That he does it super well based off of just the way that he sells into the big high octane explosive parts. I love Bobby Roode just really did everything he could to make you clear that Roddy was the better man here. Puts him over pretty much clean as a sheet coming out of it. I just thought it was probably the best way. Like you said, Roddy did need something, and I think they did a really good job here getting that heat back on Roddy, because he definitely did need it. I think you're right. If he hadn't got this win in a match, especially this good, he would have probably never been able to really get back on course.
Yeah, they would have just chumped him out. And yeah, I love this match. You know what? This match shows you don't need to be doing flips and dives to have a great match. This was all storytelling, old school storytelling. Loved how Strong got the first backbreaker. Loved the struggle on the backbreakers. Loved Roode reversing the backbreaker and working over Roddy's back. Now Roode is softening up the neck. I loved them, and then Bobby working over the neck. I thought this was excellent storytelling, great psychology. Crowd was into it. Easy, I got to give it 4 stars. Just a super strong match. These guys have great chemistry together. I mean, absolutely great chemistry together. And it's a shame. It's like a feud we got. It's like the feud that we got 2 great matches out of, got great angles out of. It was just a great short term. And it was the angle that got over Roode. It was probably Roode's best work as his champion with Roddy. And it really wasn't the feud that they wanted to feature. But because it got over so much, they had no choice. And it ended up making Roode get to the main roster. I thought it was just incredible work, the whole entire feud in general. What are your thoughts in the feud in general?
Yeah, I agree with you. It felt like it's happened a few times before, but they do the kind of mini TV feud between pay-per-views. Sometimes they would do where when you came out of it, you were kind of like, man, I wish there was a lot more to sink your teeth into there. And that's really what this felt like. It became bigger and better than what it was slated to be. It does feel like we kind of missed out on something. Roddy has really come into being a NXT WWE style worker super well.
Yep.
We talked about how, you know, in his indies matches, he was the messiah of the backbreaker because he would, you know, throw 1,000 backbreakers in a match. And in NXT here, he still throws plenty of backbreakers, but he throws just enough less to where it makes him feel a lot more important.
Yep.
And they have a lot more, like, gravity behind them. The way that they worked into him here, you talked about, yeah, I mean, this was just really well done stuff. And you talked about Roddy, this being some of Roode's best work in NXT as champion. I definitely agree with that. I actually think it was probably a really good coming out party for Roddy to show that, just what I said, that I think he's a guy that they should take a lot more seriously than it feels like they may have been. And who knows, maybe hopefully it did help because yeah, I think he's a guy who could have a pretty decent future in WWE if they just let him go out there and show people. Cause I mean, he got over in this feud and not just in ring. I mean, he got over on the mic, he got over as a character in this feud. And I think that was always the piece that I think people thought he was missing. And I think he showed that he had it here.
Yeah. The feud got over, or the key here is organically. It wasn't the feud that they wanted to feature. Cause clearly it was Drew, but you know what? Roddy outshined him, and that's part of the reason why it's easier to get behind somebody, an underdog like Roddy, than to get behind, like, especially nowadays, of this guy with long flowing hair with a kick-ass accent, drinks beer, and is big and kicks ass, you know? Because most people don't kick ass in their life. Roddy, I think Roddy can relate to a lot more of the fan base than Drew McIntyre can in NXT. With that said, I thought it was a really fun episode. What about you?
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed this one a lot. I think we talked about it. There's a lot of cool stuff coming down the pike. And I think that for the people who have been not paying attention to NXT, this is your time to hop back in, maybe watch The Last Takeover, and then jump back into watching NXT, honestly.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm looking forward to it, see where they're going. And because, I mean, it seems like I think they're poised to have some really exciting times coming up with angles and then some of the key players they're going to have around. So I'm all in on it right now, man. Looking forward to it. On that note, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll get to our final segment.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back, and we're back, and we're with we're on a culture pro wrestling, and we're looking at, what is this, the semifinals?
It's just the cup itself. I'm sorry, this is the first night of the actual cup, because they did qualifiers and stuff for months before, so this is when the official cup has started, even though they've had cup matches for like a month.
Okay. Well, it opens up with Travis Banks with Mike Bailey. And I thought this was a good athletic match. Gave it about 3.25 stars. What about you?
Let me take a look. Yeah, 3.25. This is probably... Well, no, it's not the best, but this is the epitome of this style right now. These two guys are both just these go-go-go little workers who just have amazing spot fests, can fly, can strike, can really do it all, work the mat, do everything. So they're kind of really perfect for each other, perfect opening match, honestly. But it did kind of set the table for a bigger show than what this ended up being, if that makes sense. Because this felt like the perfect opener for a show that then has like a couple 4-star matches later on, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It totally does. And that leads us to Bad Bones versus Penta El Zero Nero. What were your thoughts here?
I really liked Bad Bones' heel work here. I didn't expect such a hot start from him. It felt more like they were kind of influenced by the match that just happened on before it. I love Bad Bones kind of taking Penta from pillar to post. Penta really seemed fired up here, and maybe it's because I had gotten such a bad taste in my mouth with him. I really haven't been seeking out his matches, but he looked a lot more enthusiastic and a lot more into this match than I had seen him recently, taking big dives and, you know, actually, like, working with a sense of urgency. Love Bad Bone's slingshot spear. Way better than when Johnny Gargano does it. Actually looks like it could hurt you, so I thought that was great. Penta strings together some really nice big bomb type offense. After the first match was kind of more of a sprint, I actually thought that this match felt too spotty. I thought the opening match didn't feel like it was too spotty, even though it was like spot guys in a sprint match. But this match did actually feel like it was too spotty, even though it was like two guys you wouldn't expect that from. I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was fine for what it was, but I didn't think it was like super great.
Yeah, I gave it 2 and 3/4, so I'm with you though on everything. Then we got the Prestige versus War Machine and Marty Scurll. I just didn't think these guys worked really well together. I didn't think they had great chemistry with one another. The fact, why are you pairing War Machine and Scurll? I don't understand. I gave it 2.5 stars. It wasn't bad, but it was just something. It was definitely lacking. What are your thoughts?
I pretty much agree with you on everything there. I think that it's unfair to refer to Marty Scurll as a professional wrestler based on how little wrestling he actually does. This guy is just all shtick at this point with almost nothing. The kind of El Ligero comedy spots, playing with the briefcase and kind of goofing around and stuff at times became a little bit too heavy-handed. As I said, you know, Scurll gets his hot tag, and after Hansen and Rowe had done all this, like, kind of big hossing around, Scurll gets the hot tag to come in and dance around and yell chicken wing, and that's all he does. It's just, it really starts to grate on me. I gave it 2.5 stars, and I think that people were shitting all over Big Mike doing the Burning Hammer. I can't believe people aren't just, like, calling for blood over the fact that Scurll uses the Emerald Flosion now. It's fucking that should be just like sacrilege to these people. Come on.
And that leads us to Takahashi versus Lucky Kid. What were your thoughts here?
This was another one. I thought that Takahashi actually, like, it just shows just so much. So it just shows how much better and more polished New Japan workers are, just because they're on the big time. I mean, people think of him as a crazy spot guy, but I mean, he put some story in here. He put some work in here. He's working over the back. He's actually working the mat at some point. He's keeping the kid down and grinding on him so that his comeback can look decent. But then the kid, I mean, the Lucky Kid, the goofy stuff in the beginning with Daryl kind of took me out of the match. It made it really hard for me to feel sympathetic for him going through, because he just kind of came across dumb and cringy. But like I said, I think it just shows how much more structure and meat on the bones the New Japan workers try to actually have in their matches. Even the guys, like the junior guy here that you could see as the kind of the spot guy from New Japan, even he is like more focused on at least having some kind of narrative to the match. That said, I also gave this 3 stars. Didn't think it was like a blow-away match or anything. But I thought it was a decent showing from the kid. I think he's got potential, but he needs to focus on his match more. Needs to focus on working and like actually working the crowd and not just like kind of trying to get attention for big moves. I thought Hiromu looked pretty good.
Yeah, I gave it 2 3/4. Commentary popped me really good when they said Daryl is the Jon Snow of stuffed animals. I thought that was hilarious. They said that Daryl is the Jon Snow of cats. That's not what it was. I thought that was laugh. That made me laugh out loud. Funny. Like Lucky Kid's pluckiness, and I enjoyed the match overall. But I thought they left some stuff out there. 2 3/4. Then we get Ricochet versus Angelico. What are your thoughts here?
This was not the best Angelico match that I've seen recently, but one of his better matches. He's a guy that I was not super into for a long time, but I'm starting to enjoy him on the UK scene. again, Ricochet is just so much more polished than the guys that have kind of were on the shows earlier in the night, and even on the qualifiers before they got into the cup itself. The match, I mean, this match just had actual selling and drama. I thought the crowd was super bought into it. I loved the story of Angelico going over and over again for the fall of the Angels, but he could never get it. And then eventually you kind of Ricochet is able to counter that out and get the Sol Naciente for the submission, which is probably a little nod to his Dragon Gate past with the Yoshino, you know, that being his popularized submission hold. But Ricochet maybe needs to practice a little more because he put it on wrong the first time. But with that said, I gave it 3.5 stars. Like I said, not amazing, but still I thought a very solid match and probably the best match on the show to this point.
Yeah, I agree with you. I gave it 3.25. I liked Ricochet's draping clothesline in the rope. I thought that was really good. Liked how it was a game. They made that move a game changer, and then Ricochet starts working over the neck. Liked Angelico using his leg length as a weapon. Angelico's a little sloppy at points. Overall, it was a good match, but yeah, they definitely had some opportunities. That leads us to Joe Coffey versus Joseph Commons, is it?
Joseph Connors.
Joseph Connors, okay. What are your thoughts here?
I didn't much care for this match. Joe Coffey was a guy that I did like for a while, and I'm starting to not really be a big fan of his. I just feel like he does, especially here when he's supposed to be a heel. I think he's a decent babyface, but as a heel, I don't think he brings anything to the table for getting actual heat and changing up his style. He does that jump up high cross body that I think is great, but as a baby or as a heel, why would you do that as a big giant heel, you know? Connors, I just don't like him. I hate to say it, but I don't know why. I mean, I don't think that he looked terrible here, but I just can't ever get into him. He's just bland for me. I did like Coffey's focus on the back and the midsection throughout the match. I thought that was good. Connors hits, you know, goes for the backside, super lazy with his feet flat or with it flat on his knees, and it's like if he doesn't care about trying to get this pin, why should I care about this near fall? So that kind of ruins it for me. Coffey tries to hit the Swiss death, and he's hitting it on a guy who's much smaller than half the guys that Cesaro hits it on, and he's still at, like, it stutter steps and comes across weak and looks super fake, and it just kind of ruins the match for me. I hate Connor's finishing move. I think it looks really stupid. I gave this 2.25 stars.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I gave it a star and 3/4. I'm just not into it at all. It felt out of place here on the show, actually. And then we got Kushida versus Williams, and I enjoyed this. Gave it 3.5 stars. You know, I thought Kushida did a great job directing traffic, working the arm, and working the lid, and Williams putting it over. I thought they did an excellent job here. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you, and I talked about Lucky Kid earlier not getting sympathy. I think Williams showed here how to get sympathy. I think you really got into the underdog here. There was one point where he hit a really nice-looking lariat as, like, a big hope spot for him. I really thought that looked great for Williams. But yeah, Kushida's arm work is always great. He's focusing on it. I mean, Williams get these brief kind of comeback times, but he just can't stay, you know, in control for very long, as Kushida is just super focused. I like that Kushida does the Sleazy Kyle, like, tribute to who he considers his best opponent or his favorite opponent or whatever he says about him. You know, I just like that, kind of playing off of that history between those two. So I enjoy that. I gave this 3.25 star, and I really like this match.
And then we get to the big two matches that everyone was talking about. And the first one is Jay Lethal versus Zack Sabre Jr. What were your thoughts here?
Lethal, this was like the epitome of what I have said about Lethal in the past, is that he really can do everything, but he doesn't know why he does it or when he should do it. He looks good. He comes across like a wrestler. He doesn't come across like he's playing wrestler like a lot of guys, you know what I mean? But for me, I just feel like he lacks a lot of focus. He lacks a lot of meaning behind what he's doing, and just feels like he's just kind of doing moves just to do them. That said, I thought that his arm selling was phenomenal throughout this match. I thought he really made it super believable that Zach's work... I mean, Zach's work looks great, but Lethal's selling really put it over the top here. And then the other good side of it is Zach's arm work. The guy is just a master. I mean, I think it's really tough this year not to put him in your top for Wrestler of the Year. For me, I think I've probably got Zach number one right now. I think if he's not in your top five, then you're just not paying attention to him. Just because of just really how good he is. I loved the dive being what sets up the arm, kind of initially damages the arm for Sabre to go after. I like that Lethal was wearing two arm pads on the one arm, so he kind of slowly takes one off and then works into the other one coming off. I thought that was good. But then I felt like Lethal hits the dragon screw and then goes into the figure four, and then it really felt like they turn about and they're trying to play as if, you know, he had done enough legwork throughout to warrant this, like, being near falls and stuff. And I really didn't buy into that. I kind of thought that was just... I felt a little too tacked on. I would have liked Lethal to have maybe worked the leg a little bit more earlier in the match just to set that up. That said, I did like Zach with the small package counter out of the figure four attempt. I thought that was a good... a really nice kind of near fall spot there. And I liked the Zach Sabre catching the Lethal injection into an armbar. I thought that was a cool armbar catch that was believable instead of catching everyone doing a shooting star press into a triangle like he does all the time. I like this a lot more. I gave the match 3.5 stars. I think they both are really... they're both really good workers. I just think that there's like a real flaw in Jay Lethal's psychology that affects my enjoyment of a lot of his matches.
I can totally buy into that argument. I like that they get 4 stars. Zach on the leg early, and Jay counters to kicks to the leg, right back. Good psychology. Crowd really into it. Lethal selling was great at points. Love the finish, except again, Lethal had his arm worked over. He should have been able to set up to go for the lethal injection. That should have been his Achilles heel, if you will. But they didn't play that up at all. So, but still 4 stars. Next match, Will Ospreay versus Rey Mysterio. I liked this a lot. I gave it 3 3/4. Thought it had a big feel to it. I really liked Rey's shine here. Ospreay, heat is good. And heelish. It was good heelish, but it just didn't. Yeah. What about you? Tim?
Yeah. Sorry about that. I thought it was interesting that Ray really seemed like he was somewhat playing heel in this match at times. The crowd was really behind Ospreay, which was interesting. Like, really interesting. They were, like, almost booing Ray at times, which is pretty impressive. They talk about Ray going low on Ospreay, and then they mention, like, oh, he's telling him it's a kick to the back of the leg on commentary. And it's funny because Ospreay tweeted something about having a giant dick, and then I happened to watch I'm with Spud with Jimmy Havoc the other day, and Jimmy Havoc said that Ospreay got stopped at the airport because they thought he had a weapon in his pants. So I was like, I don't think he was working the leg. I think Ray saw that massive target and he was going for it. This kind of felt like they were working like a self-conscious epic in the lucha, like the modern day spot lucha style, which was like, it was not bad though. And this was kind of my takeaway was, like, there was a lot of stuff in here that I wouldn't have liked done by almost anyone but Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
And I think that Rey just has something to him that he can pull almost everything off. And he shows it here. Even from the opening spot, I mean, it came across choreographed, but I still enjoyed it. And then, yeah, I mean, Rey hitting, like, a top rope Casadora was nuts. Rey's selling was fantastic. having counters for, he like perfectly placed his counters for Ospreay and even gave Ospreay counters to counters that were even more perfectly timed. So yeah, I really enjoyed this match quite a bit. I actually think I came out of it giving it 4 stars for a match that like I said, I think had a lot of flaws that I would normally pick apart, but Rey Mysterio can just pull almost anything off.
Yeah, and then we got to talk about the aftermath of it, of the Ospreay speech. It was really emotional. The only thing I thought they missed the point was when Rey gave him the mask, I felt Ospreay should have put it on, and then they could have done the butting heads that Ospreay talks about and references in his post-match speech. When he was a kid, all he wanted to do was wear a Rey Mysterio mask and feel your energy. And I felt we missed that opportunity. But other than that, I thought it was a tremendous go-home speech. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was great. And I think Ospreay has really...
a real emotion. It felt real.
Ospreay is really... There's something about him. He comes across just earnest and jerky. Like, he comes across like a jerk. But then in moments like this, he comes across just earnest enough that you really buy into his emotion.
Very true. Overall, I mean, I give the show a thumbs up, slight thumbs up. I really enjoyed the last two matches, but I was expecting more. I think my expectation level was a little too high for the show, but I enjoyed it overall. What about you?
I think I liked it a little bit more than you, but that's because I came into it not expecting much because I haven't been a fan of What Culture. So I kind of had tempered expectations, so I think that's part of why I enjoyed the show.
Fair enough, fair enough. Timothy, on any thoughts on any plugs you wanted to do?
No, just the same old, same old. Nothing special these past couple weeks. I've been busy. I've got a really cool interview coming out next week, though, that I'm excited for. We got Mark Maxwell Bombo from Freelance Wrestling and RBR podcast. So check that out for sure on Lucha Undead. Otherwise, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Cool. Follow me on Titanzo Wrestling. And remember, CWF Fan Fest, October 13th, 14th. Get all the details on Twitter at JBryant025 at John Philipavage. Check it out. Have fun. Keep on watching wrestling and have a great week. See you later.